I don't get that whole corpse flower thing. What is that all about?
Have you smelled it?
No, I don't get it. I wouldn't go. Why would I go want to smell something that smells like a rotting corpse? I don't get it. I mean, it's a unique plant, and that's the attraction. I got that, and that's admirable that they keep those things going. But really, like, people are standing in line. You like what you like. It's fine.
There you go.
Man, I don't get that one at all. But we hear it every year. Every year they pull them in. It's a beautiful day. I mean, you could be outside enjoying one of our many parks and get outside and get a little sun, go fishing, but you want to stand in line to smell the corpse flower, all right? Hey, man, you know, be what you want to be. Welcome to the show, Sports on a Sunday Morning. Hey, look, we try to, you know, capture what's going on with sports all the time, trying to gauge what fans like and what they don't like. And it's very clear that people are fatigued and frustrated with the Cardinals. I mean, we've been saying it all year. There are empty seats there. People aren't going to the games. And this is not a magical process. They're going to have to take some time, not only to get the baseball back, but to get the fans back, to get their trust back, to get their love back. They're out there. Don't listen to anybody who tells you that, oh, those Cardinals fans don't show up to the games. They're fair weather. They don't pay attention to the team in St. Louis anymore, the once proud St. Louis baseball town. They're not St. Louis's greatest baseball town. They're not the best fans in baseball. Nonsense. Of course they're great fans. And they're showing you once again how they feel. And if you're Cardinals ownership, you have to recognize it. I believe that they have. And I think that the front office has. You might not believe that, and you're going to have to see actions. Words only are so much. You're going to have to see action. And it's going to take a little time here to do this, but you got to do it right. I mean, enough with the short-term solutions and trying to... We all know that the Cardinals, for a long time, operated on the philosophy of let's get into the tournament and see what happens. They won it all in 06. They won it all in 11. The difference is those two teams had some really, really good players and pitchers and star-studded lineups. This year was not going to work out that way. We all knew that. I think the 22 team had a chance to do some damage, but we haven't seen it in a while. We've seen teams that are good enough to get in. And the trade deadline was a tough one for a lot of us. I know I was going to talk about this. I promoted that I was going to do this at 10:15, but I can't help myself. I just want to do it now because the trade deadline was very frustrating for me. And I know that it was for you as well. The Cardinals did what they had to do, and that's nothing more than that. They had to. Like, they can't not trade Helsley, Mats, and Maton because those three had expiring contracts, and the Cardinals knew it just like you and I know it. They're not going to be a World Series contender, so you got to get something. It's arguable whether they got enough for Helsley. They got three single-A players. We'll never know. We may never know. We might know in a couple of years. I think they got a decent one for Mats and Blaze Jordan. We'll see. Power hitter that wasn't going to be promoted too far with the Red Sox and needed an opportunity in a lane, and it sounds like the Cardinals will give him that chance, plus Heimblum drafted him. That's cool. And Phil Maton for two prospects. But beyond that, the Cardinals did not make earth-shaking moves, and I'm not sure that they wanted to anyway. We told you about that before. In fact, John Mozeliak said it on our show here. Expiring contracts. And with position players, they didn't have any, so they weren't really motivated to move them unless they got wowed with a deal, and they didn't get wowed with a deal. Those are just facts. That's what the Cardinals wanted to do. But they dug themselves into this hole. They put themselves in that situation a long time ago by not being able to come through with the moves that they had before and the philosophy that they had before. They made some good deals for Arenado and Goldschmidt, but those two players did not deliver the franchise-shaking course of action that we thought they were going to and that the Cardinals thought they were going to when they acquired those two outstanding players to operate at the corners. They were MVP candidates. Goldie won it in 22, but they didn't come through in the postseason. And therefore, you know, another turn where they don't make the postseason. This will be the third year in a row, I'm not even going to say it. I mean, a miracle is not going to happen. They don't have the team that can run off that kind of a miracle. You know, so it is what it is. The Cardinals are at this point in a position where they've got to prove to everybody, and I'm talking about ownership first, that there is going to be a change in how they operate. Please, to the fans, do not criticize Cardinals fans. They are absolutely out there. They are 100% out there. And don't tell me otherwise. And they might not be paying attention to the games because they're upset and they're finding other things to do, which is, that's the one worry that I have, is that they will find other things to do and they'll forget what baseball, why they became baseball fans, why they love this franchise. But most of them are still there. They are angry. They're frustrated. And it doesn't mean that they aren't fans. They are, because they love the team, because they're passionate about the team, because the team is part of their DNA. They were brought up Cardinals fans. They were brought up knowing that the team was going to be great each and every year. That's why they're upset. Don't think about it any other way. I mean, you think about it any way you want. I'm going to tell you the way I think about it. So the Cardinals fans are great fans that have, a lot of them feel like they've been let down, and they don't see this team living to the standard that they used to, and so they are protesting in the form of not renewing season tickets, not making that special trip to St. Louis like they used to, down to not paying attention to the team on a daily basis like they used to. And, you know, I hear it around town all the time. People are like, hey, the Cardinals really suck, huh? To me. And I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, it's a season of trying to figure it out. This has been going on for a while. Like, then the answer is, well, I haven't watched an inning this year. So they haven't watched the team. Their perception is that the Cardinals are bad. You got to change that. That's not their fault. I mean, you've got to change that. So you've got to go to the core of the franchise, and that's what they're trying to do here. Heim Bloom will go to the minor leagues along with his team, and the transition from John Mozeliak to Heim will be a process that they're going to have to communicate this clearly to the fan base and say, here is what we are doing. No mixed messages of, oh, we want to compete. No, this is a transition. This is a this. This is a reset. This is a runway. This is an opportunity. This is a rebuild. You can say it. It's okay. Just explain it. And explain what that process is. A rebuild is building your franchise back, strength of the franchise back, so that you never have to go through this again. And that you have the Cardinals are never going to be a team that's going to outspend the Mets, Dodgers, etc. But the Cardinals are a team that can be Milwaukee. I mean, the Milwaukee's not going to outspend anybody, but they have a system in place. They believe in it. They believe in their philosophy, and they haven't wavered from it. And they have been very successful for the last 8 years, maybe more. I'd have to look at everything, but I think they've been pretty strong for a while. So the Cardinals will get back to that, is the hope. But they're going to have to be very transparent and communicate with this fan base. I believe I said this a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. You got to tell the fans what's going on. You got to take them along for the ride. They're very smart. They're very passionate. All they want is to feel like they're part of it. And if they feel detached in any way, it's a natural thing. So just understand that this Cardinals team right now, this one right here, I think that I would not put this on one person or one player or one manager or one. This is a collective thing where everybody's going to have to be on board. And from the minor leagues on, you're taught a certain way the Cardinals do things. And so fundamentally, you come right up into the major leagues and go. You're not taught the fundamentals of what you're trying to do once you hit the majors. The majors should be the show. Like you're preparing for the show, and then once you hit the show, you go. You're ready. You've been developed within the organization, and that's what's going on. Anyway, those are some thoughts that I've had about what's going on with the club. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll give you the highlights. So some of that came to fruition last night. It was a very good performance by a bullpen that is depleted and an offense that has been inconsistent. They came through in a raucous atmosphere on the road against the San Diego Padres, who were wheeling and dealing on Thursday and end up on the losing end yesterday. Cardinals can go for a series win today. We'll have the game for you at 3:10. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We will go through the highlights and reaction. Josh Schertz at 10:30 today. 10:45, Steve Kelly, Illini Sports Network, on what's going on in Champaign. We have not gotten deep enough into what they're doing. They'll be ranked. They're better than Mizzou. So let's just say that right now. Let's give them a little more. Can I see some more Illini headlines in the newspaper? Is that possible? I think about a third of our listening audience is in Illinois. Is it not, Drew? 11:15, Chris Blair, speaking of Illinois, the Enjoy Illinois 300 NASCAR's playoff race is coming up in a month. 11:30, John Mozeliak. We will dig into the trade deadline and the future of the club. 11:45, Bernie Miklas. You don't ever want to miss that. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX from the Stiefel Sports Studio. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Based on my opening monologue, a couple of comments on YouTube, and one of them is from Kevin. Always like hearing from Kevin. Says, with new leadership has to come a new manager, correct? Not necessarily, but it is something I think that will be under consideration. This is going to be Heim Bloom's decision moving forward. Ollie has one more year left on his contract next season, and we'll see what they end up doing there. And, you know, I don't know. I think right now my gut tells me that Ollie's in a good spot. It sounds like he has a good relationship with Bloom, and he also, you know, is the type of manager I think that they want during this time of developing young players, because next year will be much of the same. I mean, they're not going to come out and be some big thumping, you know, NL Central division contender, I don't think. And you want that staffed intact with Ollie and his group, maybe. But I can't guarantee it. I don't know. I don't know. We need to talk to Heim, and we will at some point talk to Bloom about his thoughts on the manager and everything else moving forward, because it will be under his leadership. John Mozeliak is still in charge until the end of October. This is C. Ramirez said, well said. That's what killed the front office, lack of transparency. You know, it really, again, it's the whole thing. Ownership tells the front office what they want. So, you know, it really is an all-encompassing thing. I do believe that you have the Cardinals' attention right now as a fan base. And at least, again, I will say I hope. I don't speak for them. I'm just the radio host who tries to tie it all together, find facts for you, answer your questions, ask questions. C. Ramirez goes on to say, I'm fine with a rebuild. Just call it and be honest. None of this is half in. Commit. Hope you express to Mo why the fans are out on this product. No, he knows, and we've talked about it, but we will get into that a little bit coming up at 11:30. All right, let's talk about some good stuff. Yesterday, the highlights were heavy for the Padres early. They took a 4-0 lead on Michael McGreevy in St. Louis. I don't know about you, but there are a lot of people, I'm sure, that turned this game off. It was late at night. It's 4-0 Padres, and people are like, click, here it goes again. I'm done. I can't sit here and watch them get beat up and have everybody throwing a party out in San Diego, this team that, boy, wouldn't it be nice to have all those players and all that aggression and all that momentum going your way, and the Padres with Mike Shield at the helm are up 4-0, and they're high-fiving in the dugout, and they're drinking beer out in the seats and having a good old time in San Diego, and they're going to spill out into the gas lamp district and have a good night as well. And the Cardinals said, hold it right there. They cut the lead to 4-1, then 2-on for Pedro Pájez.
1-2 the count. Outfield is deep. The pitch to Pájez is hit deep to left field. That ball is gone. Way out of here. A monster home run by Pedro Pájez has just tied this game at 4.
That was a blast off the bat of Pájez. 422 feet off the Western Metal Supply Building in left at Petco Park. An absolute cannon off the bat of Pájez, and the Cardinals tied the game at 4. And then, to Michael McGreevy's credit, he was able to pitch through the 4th and the 5th, and in the top of the 6th, the Cardinals rewarded him. Here is Mason Winn with runners aboard.
A 1-0 pitch for Mason Winn. A swing and a ball hit down the left field line, and it is a fair ball. It goes to the wall. Herrera scores. Burleson is trying to score. The relay to the plate. The slide safe as the ball got away from Fermin. The Cardinals have a lead of 6-4.
There's some life in that Cardinals dugout. And Michael McGreevy, love this kid. I mean, he's going to go through some tough times. He got hit on Sunday at Busch Stadium in his last start against the Padres. This time around, he's facing San Diego again, and he shoves right here. Let's take a listen.
The pitch. Swing and a miss, and he strikes out Laureano to end the sixth.
Laureano, who the Padres just picked up in their crazy trade deadline, gets the K, and McGreevy gets through six, allowing four runs on seven hits. That's good because it sets up the bullpen, and you don't have to overtax them with three or more innings. You get them only three, and the Cardinals, again, they have a 6-4 lead. They added in the ninth inning, to make it 8-4 on RBIs from Burleson and Contreras. In the bottom of the ninth inning, working on his fourth out, having given up a run, but JoJo Romero trying to get his first Cardinals save.
He has the sign he wants, takes a look to first where Contreras plays behind the runner, the pitch, and a high fly ball hit to deep right field. That is back at the wall, and it's caught by Newt Barr for a Redbird winner. A long loud out number three ends the game. This ball game has come to an end on the flyout by Fernando Tatis Jr. The Cardinals have evened the series and the season series with the Padres. The final in this one, 8-5.
Ooh, how about that? John Rooney mentioning they can win the season series with the victory today against the Padres. 3-10 start, 2-15 pregame. Very nice job by the Cardinals overall getting that victory. They go on to win it 8-5. And they win the second of a three-game set. And Romero closes it out. Before that, Kyle Lahey. He pitched an inning and two-thirds scoreless. The Cardinals' bullpen, without Helsley, Matz, and Maton, is going to have to feature those two, plus Matt Swanson, who the Cardinals like a lot and want to see him in high-leverage situations. Gordon Graceffo will also get that opportunity. And I do think Riley O'Brien is going to get a lot of opportunities late in the game to show what he can do with those nasty pitches that he throws. I think Ryan Fernandez will probably get another look at some point, and there will be more as the Cardinals are going to try to toss some of these guys out there to see what they have, because they didn't get to pitch in high leverage situations with Maton and Matz taking up a lot of those, and obviously Helsley on the back end. The Cardinals win it 8-5. Terrific job by McGreevy to hang in there. Good offense as well. And the Cards pick up a win. We will have the Cardinals coming up at, again, 3:10. Can we listen to a little bit of Ollie Marmol, just the beginning of what he had to say? You have that, Drew? I believe we got this from FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. Let's listen.
There's a lot of positives in that game. Watching McGreevy navigate that lineup, that's a tough one. And they had a really good approach against him at home, and for him to go out there, give up a couple early within the first three innings, and then adjust and give us another three of scoreless baseball. You can just tell, man, he just gained his edge. His execution was great in the last three innings, and gave us a look at it. But I liked watching him in between innings and just his ability to make adjustments and get through that. So that was a positive.
That's Ollie Marmol talking on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest in front of the media about the Cardinals win 8-5, and he started with his talk about McGreevy, which, well, he should have. Andre Pallante gets the start today. If you recall, Pallante had a brilliant outing in his last outing. He went seven innings, gave up one hit. So we'll see if he can repeat that here today against a great Padres team. He mentioned the ferocious lineup that they have. I mean, it is. Let's just be honest. Tatis, Arise, Machado, Merrill, Bogarts, O'Hearn, Laureano, Cronenworth, Fermin. That's the lineup that the Padres threw at the Cardinals yesterday. And it's that's really good. We'll see if they can, what they can do today against Pallante. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll switch gears to college basketball. Josh Schertz is standing by for a chat on the Billikens right after this.
Now, back to the Grape Bar Sports on a Sunday morning on 104.1 KMOX. From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Welcome back to the show. We're joined by St. Louis University men's basketball coach Josh Schertz. He is with us live on KMOX during the basketball season on these 10:30 visits. And now, as we get closer to the basketball season, we have Coach rejoining us. It's always a pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I love college basketball, and it can't get here soon enough. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like you want to get going, or do you need more time with these gentlemen on the floor?
Oh, man, yeah, no, it's certainly, you get back. I kind of always look at it when, college football season kicks off and NFL and then the U.S. Open and tennis. That's about go time. So I'm going to enjoy these couple weeks, but they just finished off 8 weeks Thursday night, had open scrimmage, had a great crowd. That kind of was the capstone of the summer for us. And now they get a couple weeks at home. And then, we laid a lot of, good stuff in terms of foundational stuff here over the 8 weeks. But we're definitely going to need some time to get into the nuance and the granular details, what we got to do. But I think November 3rd can't get here quick enough.
Well, I just did an entire start of the show talking about Cardinals fans and just, understanding who they are and how much they care about their franchise. Tell me about Billiken's fans now that you've had a year plus here. What do you hear from them? What do you know about them? And, basketball has been played at St. Louis University for a long, long time. But what do they feel about the expectation moving forward?
Yeah, I think, my interactions with the fans have been great, probably because I don't go online a whole lot, but, in person, they've been great. Honestly, getting, I don't know what we had, 750, 1,000, 1,200, I really don't know what the number was. We had a ton of people out for a Thursday practice, in July, which is incredible. And I think it was really eye-opening for our guys. St. Louis is an incredible sports town. You can see it. I think, when I look at fans, you have, you kind of have in two boxes, right? You have, you have fans and you have supporters. I think there's like nuanced difference, in that supporters are the ones that, they bleed blue. They are true diehards. They're with you, through the thick and the thin. I think fans maybe tend to be a little bit more result oriented. And, so there's, when things are good, they're out. When things are bad, they're not. And you need both to be successful, to be honest with you. I think, it's a part of, you're not going to have, 100% supporters. But I found this community, you have a ton of people that I would put in that supporters box. You got a ton of fans that are, hey, we're interested. If this thing gets going, we're there. I felt it last year in certain games. Obviously, you were at the home games, but, we sold out for Dayton. But I think our last three home games in Chaffetz, we had over 8,000 each game. And that's with a team that, wasn't exactly, tearing it up. I mean, we certainly weren't bad, but we weren't, winning the league. And so to get, 8,000 plus in there those last three nights is a credit to those supporters and those fans who came out to watch. I think every organization, school needs them in terms of, people that really have their back. And, in terms of expectations, I talk about that a lot. I think that's, that's part of being a fan. I think you have that. You have to have that. And people set expectations super high, and they should. And then they kind of ride the roller coaster of that. But inside our walls, we only talk about possibilities, right? I mean, at the end of the day, expectations have the word expect in them, which means something's a given. The way we view things, or at least the way we talk about it with our team and internally, is it's about possibilities and what are our possibilities. And as a team, we feel like, we certainly have the possibility to become a great team, to be a championship team. But we know if we don't do the right things, we don't prioritize winning, we don't beat back those silent forces, we certainly aren't gonna be a team that does much of anything. So I think it's about possibilities inside those walls. But I do understand outside those walls, the expectations.
You will change the look of this team, and this is a natural thing in college basketball now from year to year with the addition of the transfer portal activity and everything else. We're learning about new players. What is it about this team to you, first and foremost, that feels different from last year's?
Yeah, I think, it's a different vibe all the way around. As you said, there's a lot of newness, but we do have, five guys that are returners. That's different than walking in last year where, Robbie and Isaiah were the only two guys that had any familiarity with me or culture or system. So five is better than two. I just think the overall, you know, I touched on it last year when we got beat in the NIT. You know, we had to revamp our roster. We had to get bigger from a positional size. We had to get more athletic. Our skill level had to improve. We need to be more physical. We need to have more collective playmaking, more collective shooting. You know, we had a lot of areas to really go in, hone in on, and get better in, because I didn't think we were, you know, close to where we wanted to be. And, you know, and I think we've done that. You know, we've certainly, from a personnel standpoint, the depth of player, those boxes were certainly bigger. We're more athletic. We're more collectively skilled. I mean, we're not going to miss guys like Gibb and Swope, because we are. But the collective playmaking, the collective shooting, the collective talent, the collective physicality, the positional size, the speed, athleticism, I think are all dramatically different from what they were with our 24-25 team. And that's part of, like, you know, we had a, you know, last year we started on April 8th when I got to St. Louis in terms of recruiting and had to get 11 players. This year we were done by April 13th. So it's a little bit different, you know, in terms of the time and what we're able to do. There's no excuse, but that's just the reality of the situation. But again, you know, last year's team, I thought with all the injuries, you know, my internal, you know, being there every day, my internal opinion was that group gave us everything they had. We had really high character guys. As a coach, every year, you know, you want the sum to be great in individual parts. I thought last year's team was certainly that, the way they fought, the way they cared. You know, they had a bunch of wins that maybe, you know, were very unlikely, and it got in the NIT, and they laid a great foundation for what's to come. And so this team, you know, has to do the same thing. But as we, you know, for coaches, you're trying to, you know, the goal is to make sure that the sum is great in individual parts. Our individual parts are much greater than last year's. And if we can do the same thing in terms of the sum being greater, then obviously our ceiling is much higher as a team.
And you want to bubble wrap that ankle of Robbie Avila. I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean? I mean, last year, that didn't help you at all. I mean, having that happen twice, that's a rough start for the hub of your offense, really.
Yeah, he had. I mean, you know, and last year was, you know, it was hard in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, to really go through, if you think about it, you know, Josiah Doetzler's out after three games. You know, AJ Casey's out after three games. You know, we lose Kellen. I mean, Kellen played a couple of games, but really Kellen played four games in health, you know. Mm-hmm. And the fifth game of the season, Quinnipiac, Robbie in out of lineup. We lose Larry after six games. By early December, we were pretty decimated in terms of our roster. And, you know, Robbie's ankle, dealing with multiple injuries, I think, you know, last year was really good for him, because I think that's how you grow. You need regression. You need friction. You need resistance. Things can't always just go your way. And not that he hadn't worked at it. He had. And he had a great year. You know, people, when they talk about Robbie, they talk like, you know, he really struggled. I mean, I think he averaged over 17, 7-4. He's one of five players in America in college basketball to do that. He led the country for centers and made threes and assists. So I don't want to make it like, hey, he wasn't terrific, because he was. But certainly I think last year was really good for him. And as you said, him being healthy is a huge piece of this. He's done a really good job. I think he's in the best shape I've seen him in my time with him over the 4 years. Body looks really good. He's done really worked really hard to try to, you know, build back and be proactive in terms of his ankle, not just rehab, but really being aggressive here proactively to make sure he's strengthening it and continuing to do that. And I think he's ready to have a terrific senior year. I do. I think he's had a great summer. You know, I think he enjoys his teammates. I think he sees, you know, what this could be. And he's got to be, as you said, you know, a massive piece for us. If we're going to have the kind of year we hope to have, Robbie's going to be a huge part of that. And him being healthy is a massive piece for us.
And those bigger players, as you mentioned, we've talked a lot about Paul Otieno. You and I have the Quinnipiac product who will be hitting the glass and taking a little pressure off of Robbie in that respect. I think that I'm very intrigued, though, with Deion Brown. I'm very curious to hear what your summer evaluation was of Brown, who was a starter at Boston College, dropped 20 points on North Carolina. He, from what I hear, is very much a leader on this team, is he?
Yeah, Deion Brown's, you know, I had high expectations, one of those guys that I'm shocked at how good he is. I really am. He's we got a team full of guys who can really guard. You look at guys like Quentin Jones and Amari McCutcheon. We got big, long guards that can really sit down and make it problematic. I think Deion Brown's as good an on-ball defender as I've ever coached. I mean, he's unbelievable effort on that end. He picks up full court. He changes the game with his energy. As you said, he's got a great voice. He comes in and does it in a really good way. He's positive energy every day. I think last year's team, you know, we talk a lot about calm endurance and how important that is to winning a championship, and it is. And we had a lot of guys who were really, you know, even keeled throughout the ups and downs. Robbie's that way, Gibbs that way, Swope's that way, Kobe, all those guys. We didn't have a guy with that competitive fire, that energy every day that really just turned everything up. And Deion is that to a T, and you need that. Blessing was that for us at Indiana State. We didn't have that last year. Deion Brown is that. He's a capable three-point shooter. He shot over 35% from three every year. You know, you go to Boston College, like you said, he started at Boston College and, you know, and played, you know, 27, 28 minutes a game last year in the ACC. And before that, the year before that at UMBC, he leads the America East in scoring and rebounding, 21.4 points a game, 9.8 rebounds in league play, 19-7 overall. And just at his size, his ability to impact the game, so physical, so good defensively, makes threes. He's right there with Quentin and Amari and Kellen, our best guys, at getting downhill. He's impossible to keep out of the paint. He can post up and score. So, and he's probably second to Paul in offensive rebounding this summer. So, and like I said, he's our best defender. So it's a lot he brings to the table. He's we thought he would be good, but he's far exceeded what I thought he would be when we signed him.
And then one last one I want to talk about, and we can talk about all your players as we go along here during the course of this year, but Ishan Sharma, who also played in the ACC at Virginia, what is he like? And obviously, my guess is he came to St. Louis to get an opportunity with the Billikens to play more.
Yeah, you know, no question. He, you know, Ishan's a guy that, you know, I recruited Indiana State. You know, he's a big, you know, he's 6'5" and a half. He's got terrific ball skills. He can pass the basketball. He makes simple reads. But the thing Ishan does at the highest level is shoot. He can shoot off movement. He can shoot off the dribble. You know, he had a fantastic summer for us. He fits systematically with how we play, how we've leveraged guys like him in the past, both, you know, Indiana State, Lincoln Memorial, you know, Gibb last year. I think he's very much, you know, in that same vein. You talk about, you know, collective shooting, you know, for the summer, we've tracked these going back many years. Now we've had some great shooters make 100-plus threes, I think, each of the last 6 or 7 years. Trey Green and Ishan Sharma, you know, have made it this summer, made as many as anybody we've had in the previous 6 or 7 summers. So, and both did it at well over 40% in live play. So both guys had fantastic summers. Ishan's a guy with his size, his ability to pass, his shot making, the gravity he brings. He's a guy that wants to do everything right. He's competitive defensively. He's incredibly smart, and size with playmaking. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Like Ishan, Brady Dunlap in that same vein, Quentin at 6'5", 6'6", et cetera, Mari. Our playmaking distribution will take some of that load off. Talk about Robbie. He had a lot on his plate last year, as did Swope. Those guys, you know, Robbie will have less, which should be more for him. You know, less minutes should make him fresher. Less playmaking off of his plate should allow him to be more efficient. And Ishan, his shooting and the collective shooting of that group was fantastic. So I think Ishan's primed to have a really, really good year for us. The six guys we brought in the portal, you never know till you have them. You know, we thought we did well, but you know, having them here for 2 months, you know, we really hit on all six in terms of what they can be, you know, what they bring to the table. And I think people will see, you know, we'll have a much deeper team. I expect us to be able to play, you know, you're not going to play 11 guys in a 40-minute game, but I think we can go, you know, certainly 9 deep and certainly deeper than that if need be, you know, with the roster we have.
Good to hear. Looking forward to it. College Hoops will be here before you know it. Josh Schertz, head coach of the Billikens, with us. Thanks so much. We'll catch up with you soon. I will see you soon.
Absolutely. Look forward to it, Tom. Have a great weekend. I'll see you soon, buddy.
You too. Josh Schertz, head coach at SLU. When we come back, we go into some college football. Illinois fans, get ready. Your team is not only going to be ranked, they're going to compete in the upper echelon of the Big Ten. We'll talk to Steve Kelly about it next on KMOX.
From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
I want to say it's probably five decades now of Steve Kelly, a fixture in Illini sports, covering the Fighting Illini, basketball, football, and otherwise, hosting the Saturday morning show on WDWS in Champaign, Urbana, is one of my favorite guest spots. I love coming on the show with Steve and Lauren Tate, and Steve joins us now on KMOX. Appreciate you joining us. How are you?
I'm good, Tom. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great. What's going on in Champaign and beyond? Are they fired up about this Illini football program?
Well, they really are. They're coming off a 10-win season, of course, 10-3 last year with a Citrus Bowl victory over South Carolina. And those 10-win seasons don't happen very often or haven't happened very often in the last, well, whenever. It's only happened last year under Brett Bielema, 2001 under Ron Turner, 1989 under John Makovic, 1983 under Mike White, and then back in 1902, I was not here for that. I was under a guy named Edgar Holt. But so only five times in 136 years of Illinois football has an Illinois football team won 10 games. So they're trying to build on that and trying to go back-to-back winning seasons for the first time in a while.
What a massive game it's going to be on August 30th when Ohio State hosts Texas. The night before that, Illinois will be playing a 6:30 kickoff for them against Western Illinois at Memorial Stadium in Champaign. And I think not the Western Illinois game necessarily, but the early part of the schedule is key for you, isn't it, Steve? I mean, if you can get through that first part of the schedule, you go to Duke on September 6th. You have Western Michigan out of the MAC on the 13th. Then it's Indiana on the road, USC at home, at Purdue should be a win, Ohio State at home before the bye. If you can get through that with not too many blemishes, you could be in really good shape for that second half.
Well, a lot of fans are starting to use the P word, the playoff word, which I think is a little bit too early for that, but based on the way things have gone around here in the past. And Brett Bielema was just trying to stack, you know, season upon season, recruiting class upon recruiting class, and this will be his fifth year. But you're right, they got a road game at Duke, and I think it's too early to say if Illinois would go in there as the favorite on the road. I wouldn't think so, but it might be a toss-up game. The Western Illinois and Western Michigan games should be victories. You mentioned Purdue. Should be a win going over there. Purdue only won one game last year, but they came from 35 points down in the second half against Illinois in Champaign, actually took the lead, and Illinois had to kick a field goal to get into overtime to win that ball game. So Purdue seems to have had Illinois' number, even when Purdue's not very good. But I think the key is this year is how many toss-up games there might be. Last year, Illinois was 5-1 in one possession games. That doesn't happen too often in any one season, and you can't count on that happening all the time. So, I think those are motivational items for Brett Bielema to not to let the guys get too much of a big head going into the season. But certainly, they've got a lot of guys back, led by Luke Altmyer, and they've got to find a couple of receivers, I think. But the expectations are certainly high. Highest I can remember since back in the Mike White, John Makovic days.
That's exciting. And Altmyer is a great quarterback. I mean, if you ask people who are the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten, he is on that list without a doubt. You can count him on one hand, and Altmyer is on that list. What about defensively? How is this team defensively looking forward to the season?
Well, I think they've got some people to replace along the D-line, but they've got some good outside linebackers led by Gabe Akis, who is a preseason Big Ten pick. They've got outstanding defenders in the backfield. The Scott fellas, Xavier Scott, Miles Scott, no relation, but they're both good players back there. Matthew Bailey is a guy that's been around for a long time as well. So they've got a lot of starters back, a lot of experience, and an interesting schedule, no doubt. That 21-17 win over South Carolina was big. It got them to that 10-win point, and it was kind of an interesting game. If your listeners and you saw it on TV, there was a lot of antics, so to speak, going on the sideline there between the coaches, but I thought it was good for college football.
Well, I mean, Brett Bielema doesn't take crap from anybody. I mean, he's you know, he's always been that way. That's the thing, and this is the final thing for you, Steve, is that he has done what he said he was going to do. He has established a culture. I mean, he commands respect, and I think you have a true college football coach. Brett Bielema is going to establish a culture, and that is what he has done.
He has done that, and I think he's kind of running it kind of like not only a major college program, but kind of like an NFL program as well, because he has worked under some guys, Bill Belichick to be one, in the NFL. He's kind of a CEO. He's the perfect guy. He seems to get every part of the job, every angle. He deals with the media very well. Not that that's that important, but he gets the fan relationships as well, getting out in the community. And you're right, the culture is the key word, and I think he's got a good start. The year before last was a little bit of a disappointment, but they bounced back pretty strongly last year.
Well, I'm looking forward to it all, including their trip to my alma mater, Indiana. That should be a heck of a showdown on September 20th, especially if you can get through the Duke game. That would be a fun one to see who's the next to make a run at the top dogs in the Big Ten. Indiana did it last year. Can Illinois do it this year? We'll see. Steve Kelly, longtime part of Illinois sports and the Illini Sports Network, WDWS in Champaign. It's a pleasure to hear your voice as always, my friend. Thank you for doing this morning.
No problem, Tom. Anytime. You know that.
Great to visit with him. He's also very heavy on the Cardinals. Likes to hear all about him. And he and Lauren ask me great questions when I make Saturday morning appearances on their station. Our favorite is when we do a three-way call with my man David Kaplan, who does what I do with the Cardinals with the Cubs. And we have a good time together with all of that. So I appreciate all the folks in Illinois who tune in to us and who listen to sports on a Sunday morning. Keep an eye on the Illini now. I mean, they have a real chance here to do some damage, and it could be a fun year. I cannot wait for college football to start. Man, what a great way to kick off the season, too. Texas at Ohio State. Be careful of Texas. I know Ohio State's the national champion, but that Texas team with Arch Manning is going to be loaded. I wouldn't be surprised if they're the number one team in the nation for a good portion of the season. We'll be back after this.
Here is Tom Ackerman.
Scott Jago with a sharp-looking Buffalo Bills hat this morning in honor of Marv Levy turning 100. I can tell you that. Big birthday for Marv, who once coached at St. Louis Country Day School.
I remember hearing that a long time ago, but he was a very impressive man. He is a very impressive man.
Yes.
You know, he couldn't get us over the hump to win the Super Bowl, but took us to four of them. That was pretty good.
Sure did, and he was there in attendance at the Hall of Fame ceremonies yesterday, wearing the gold jacket and being acknowledged, and the crowd saying happy birthday to him, and it was just great to see Marv surrounded by some great people. And I always pull for the Bills. I want the Bills to win. You talk about a fan base that's frustrated. You think you're frustrated out there. Hey, look, St. Louis has won championships in all the major ones. I mean, we won an NBA title years ago. We don't have a team anymore. Won a Super Bowl, don't have a team anymore. Yeah. Won the Stanley Cup, won the World Series 11 times. I mean, we've done some winning around here, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. I would love one Super Bowl.
Just one.
One Stanley Cup.
Just one Super Bowl.
We're definitely
parade.
Way farther away from the Stanley Cup than the Super Bowl.
That's true. Buffalo hasn't won a Stanley Cup. I mean,
no, it came close.
Came close.
Came close.
No, we don't want to relive that one.
No, we don't.
No, we'll forget about that.
All right.
But I appreciate you. Yeah, you know, that was a big day yesterday. The names that did go into the hall, Sterling Sharp, now he was a good receiver in his day, as well as Antonio Gates, who was a basketball player turned tight end. He was tremendous. Eric Allen, great, great defensive back. Jared Allen, also terrific, terrific defensive player. I thought the Sterling Sharp scene was really neat, where he took off his gold jacket and he gave it to Shannon, who had given Sterling his first Super Bowl ring. That's a nice thing to be able to exchange that and you know, a nice friendship between the two who are brothers. But I just feel this absence. I just feel this hole in my heart that Torrey Holt's not there. I mean, I just still don't get this. And I know that this is a pass happy league and wide receiver numbers are what they are, But how do you forget about Torrey Holt and the numbers that he posted year after year? And by the way, for some losing teams, too, after winning the Super Bowl as a rookie, the fact that Torrey Holt is not in and all of his Super Bowl teammates are the big names, of course, that we've gone through a million times, makes me really unhappy. So, I like the NFL. I'm not a fan anymore of a team. I sort of, casually keep an eye on everything. And I do it because it's entertaining and they're the best players and it's a big league and it's always on and it's nice to have something on Sunday. But I can't love this league anymore. One, what happened with the St. Louis Rams, I'm past it and all of that. But this not having Torrey Holt in the Hall of Fame is just ridiculous. I mean, it's probably because the Rams moved from St. Louis to Los Angeles and he was a St. Louis Ram, and I know that he's there supporting everything that they do over in L.A. and all that stuff. How is he not in the Hall of Fame? It's just insane. Just continued drama. I mean, I've covered the training camp for a long time, so I know that everyone looks for storylines and the drama. It's just hard to avoid it in Dallas. It's just constant. Cowboys owner and GM, Jerry Jones, he shouldn't be the GM. He's just the owner, but that's my opinion. He says he doesn't intend to trade Micah Parsons after the star defensive end says he wants to leave the team amid a breakdown in negotiating a contract extension. Parsons, where is he? He's in training camp. He's walking around on the sidelines wearing a hoodie. He wrote on social media Friday that he requested a trade. He has yet to practice because of a back injury. Didn't speak to reporters. Walked off the field. Jones fielded questions for more than 15 minutes, and he's used to all this, these prolonged disputes with standout players. He insisted the standoff with Parsons is no different than past situations. He told fans, don't lose sleep over this. So it's just one after the other down in Dallas. Are they ever going to win again in Dallas? Are the Cowboys ever going to win again?
I hope not.
Yeah, well, it says the Giants fan over here. How do you, you NFL fans crack me up. I mean, it's easy to be a Chiefs fan. You just throw your jersey on and they go win Super Bowls or appear in them. But how do you be, how can you be a Bears fan every year? They build you up, all this hope, and a Cowboys fan for that matter. They build you up, and then you have a bad year. And every Sunday is just pain. And how do you go through that? Giants fan over here, Drew Young. I love being a casual NFL fan. Is it not the best, folks? You just kick back. You enjoy your Sunday. If I want to watch, I can. If I don't, I don't. I follow my fantasy team. Maybe you throw a buck or two on a game or a situation every once in a while. You watch the playoffs because everybody watches the playoffs, and it's a fun thing to have on during the holidays and in January. But, man, the frustration of being an NFL fan and watching your team fall apart. I'm so glad that that's in the rearview mirror. That said, I'd take an NFL team if some billionaire, multi-billionaire wants to walk into St. Louis and give us one and pay for everything, the stadium and everything else. We are still the largest market without an NFL team, but that said, I'm good without it. Let me do this. We're going to come back with some NASCAR. Let me also mention the crossover between MLB and NASCAR yesterday called the Speedway Classic, suspended by rain. That's a shame because I know they were all hyped up to do that collaboration between the two, but there was a massive amount of rain yesterday, a 2-hour, 17-minute rain delay. They suspended that MLB Speedway Classic at Bristol between the Braves and the Reds. They pushed that to this afternoon. The Last Great Coliseum is what that racetrack is called. Organizers threw a big party mixing NASCAR themes with baseball, with Tim McGraw performing, and players stood in the back of trucks and rode around the half-mile bullring racetrack. But the rain had the final say on the day. I'm hearing and reading on social media about these horror stories of food not being available and, nachos with nothing on them and hot dogs with no buns and long lines and just torrential downpours and a total mess over there. I hope they get it all straightened out and they're able to play ball today. When we come back, we'll talk NASCAR with Chris Blair, who's up in Iowa at the NASCAR race there. Worldwide Technology Raceway, the Enjoy Illinois 300, is coming your way in a little over a month. And then John Mozeliak at 11:30, Bernie Miklas at 11:45 on KMOX.
Here is Tom Ackerman.
Corn is the name of the day for NASCAR. It is Iowa, Iowa Speedway. We are ready to go for a 2:30 start as this regular season continues for the Cup Series, and it is Iowa's turn. It's time. It is time to visit with the general manager of Worldwide Technology Raceway, Chris Blair, with us. Who, have you made it to Iowa? Are you ready to go?
We made it to Iowa. Declan O'Neill and Mark Fournier from my staff, we hopped in the truck at about 4:45 this morning and left the racetrack. And thanks to the Bomarito Automotive Group GMC Sierra, we are here and having a great time so far. It's a beautiful day in Iowa.
Yeah, it is a beautiful day down here as well, and I'm looking forward to your race coming up, the Enjoy Illinois 300. But in the meantime, Iowa, good state for racing, isn't it? They have some great fans there that come down to your track.
Oh, it's the place to be this week because they had the Sprint Car 360 Nationals this past weekend. The Knoxville Nationals start up this Wednesday with a NASCAR race thrown in right in the middle of it. So it's really the center of the racing universe this month, and we'll be the center of the racing universe next month.
Iowa Speedway, short track, right, Chris?
Yes, it is. It's the only 7/8 mile racetrack you'll ever find anywhere on the planet. So that it's a really interesting layout, really interesting shape, and it really produces some good racing. I'm excited about being here today. I haven't been to the Cup race here. I've been seeing Indy cars. I've seen the Busch Grand National Series here, but this is my first time seeing Cup Series, and I'm really excited about today's race.
What do you start evaluating? What do you look for when you go to a NASCAR Cup event, knowing that you've held one for the last 3 years and you have a playoff race coming on September 7th?
Well, we're always looking for those tweaks. What can we do to make our events a little more fan-friendly, a little more exciting? Right now we're out on the midway and the guys are out taking pictures and measuring things. Just looking for different things we can pick up to add to our show and, what we can do just to, bring the new level of excitement and entertainment. And they're getting ready. They're going to have a pre-race concert, just much like we have with our Confluence Music Festival. So there's a lot of those things that we take into consideration and what we look at, because in the end, it's all about making sure those fans are happy. And, the guys right now, they're looking at the kids zone and the NASCAR fan experience. All those pieces will be coming to our place. And so it's everything's looking really nice. They've done a good job here at Iowa, and it kind of challenges us to step up our game and make sure that we're better than them when everybody comes to our town.
What's the biggest thing that fans told you about last year that you will try to apply to this year?
Last year with the feedback we received about the Gateway Garage experience and the infield fan zone, that is one of the biggest things that fans love about coming to our racetrack. So that's one of the things we really pay a lot of attention to. And then when I first got here this morning, also, we've been getting a lot of positive reviews about our traffic and our parking, getting people in and getting people out in a fast and timely manner. The parking company that I was using this weekend will be the same guys we've used for the last 3 years. And we had a meeting as soon as I arrived on site, and we're getting everything dialed in so that we can make it even more efficient for everybody to get in and get it out of the racetrack.
The Confluence Music Festival, I still have not seen an official lineup announced for that. Do you know when that's coming?
It's coming this week. We've got one artist, but there was some issues with the radius pause thing, but we've got, it's a great lineup. I mean, there's some big names. Our post-race concert is going to be absolutely incredible. Great country music act for the post-race concert. His name sounds real similar to Party. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. So if you'd like to have a post-race party, this would be a good person to see. I've got a really great female musical act on the pre-race. And also on that pre-race, we've got Bill Murray. Again, yeah, that Bill Murray, him and his band will be playing. And our Saturday lineup, obviously Adam Wainwright post-race. But the one that we're kind of holding out on, we have to wait out for a little bit of a radius clause. It's going to be our Saturday pre-race guy. And he likes to say yeah and okay a lot. So that's all I can say without giving his name away.
Dropping some big hints. Yeah, Chris Blair dropping some big hints for all the music fans out there. It is fun. I mean, it is a fun experience. It's the NASCAR Cup playoff race as well. So that kind of adds to it all, the music, the food, the excitement. I've been partnering with you on this for a long time since you were pursuing a Cup race. But did you have plans back then that this could become a playoff race that it could possibly move to this portion of the season?
No, that was the one thing that just really took me by surprise. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, we were just happy that we got the cup race. And, you know, in the back of our mind, we wanted the Xfinity Series. So we found out we were getting the Xfinity Series, so we were happy about that. And then when they dropped that bomb on us that we were also going to be part of the playoffs, that just really exceeded our expectations, because it adds such another level of drama to what we do. And, you know, our racing has always been great, and it's always been intense. Well, knowing that you need to win or go home in one of those kind of playoff situations is going to make the racing even better. You know, and with the Xfinity race being the last race of the regular season, that's going to be a real barn burner under the lights on Saturday night, September the 6th. So that show is going to be incredible. And then you follow it up the next day with a cup race that has so many implications in the playoffs. Yeah, it's going to – it really has exceeded our expectations. We're really excited about it.
Chris, it's in Madison, Illinois, which everybody knows is right just outside of downtown St. Louis. Is the city behind you on this? I mean, do you feel that still, that the city is giving you the support? I know you have a fan fest at Ballpark Village that Thursday before everything gets going.
Yeah, we, you know, we're seeing it really strongly from the, you know, a lot of our corporate partners, the hotel groups that we work with, such as LHM. They do such a fantastic job in helping us with all this. You know, there's obviously, we'd love to say we want more, but, you know, it's everybody knows when we're, that the race is coming to town. Everybody's rallying around it. So there's some great community support. And you see the effort we get with Dave Stewart, Worldwide Technology, the Stewart Family Foundation, all that they do to help bring more community awareness into this program. And that's one thing people don't realize, is like our music lineup is produced by the Muni. So arguably it doesn't get any better in entertainment than having Kofi Coleman and the Muni group working with us. So it adds that element of first class to everything that we do. And so, yeah, we love the support we're getting. We're always wanting to be more and more ingrained in the St. Louis community. And, you know, it is, it's just, you can see your house from here kind of approach, you know, you're that close. And when people come from out of town, they love everything they get to do around town as well. So, you know, it's been very, very welcoming. And I think we're each year we seem to be gathering more and more support. So it's an ongoing, growing situation.
Well, that's a good point, actually, because some of these tracks are a little further from a city. So you have, you know, this track is actually close to downtown. So you have the ability to stay at a downtown hotel and only be 5-10 minutes away.
That's right. And, you know, that's one of the things that you look at some of these places. I know one track I was actually looking at traveling in for a day show just to buzz in and buzz out. And the racetrack is so far out of town and so far away from the airport that it's difficult to get to. And then I hear from folks who want to come into St. Louis. They know it's 20 minutes from Lambert, and you can, you know, take an Uber or you can grab a quick rental car and be at the track, see the race, and then get out of town if you need to. We've got a very unique situation where we are. And like you and I have talked about before, that sports corridor, what other city has so many great sports and entertainment venues in such a short drive? There's nothing like what we have in St. Louis, and the racetrack being part of that is a tremendous boost for us and for the overall sport.
What is the Fan Fest going to be like on Thursday, Chris? Do you have full details on that just yet?
We're putting a really big emphasis on the fact that the Xfinity Series is coming back. So there's going to be a lot of the Xfinity Series drivers, their rigs. We're really putting a big focus on that because, you know, the history of the racetrack was built on those great moments, and we're really excited about having that series come back. The new program they have going on with the CW, the fact that the defending champion is a somewhat hometown boy, there's just so many factors that play into that. So we're really putting a big focus on the return of Xfinity because I think it's a great, great opportunity, and we're really happy to have them back. So that's going to be the primary focus of FanFest this year.
And finally, are tickets moving pretty well, and are you still seeing requests from around the country for this race?
Yeah, we are. The tickets are doing very well. We've got a few sections of grandstands that are in the 85% range on capacity. Camping so far, we're at 85% on available camping. So people were sitting on the fence and deciding if they're going to bring the camper out, they better make up their mind up really quick because that is going to sell out probably in the next 10 days or so, we think. And as far as the appeal from all over, it's absolutely amazing. I've been getting messages from more people from Canada. A lot of international tourists. For some reason, there's a lot of folks coming from Australia this year. I'm not exactly sure what that's about, but it seems like there's a large group from Australia coming. So, yeah, it's they're coming from all over. So it's not just a local event. This is an international destination race.
I love it. Maybe it's the change in date. You know, maybe it's the fact that it's NASCAR playoffs. Whatever the case, it's, you know, changed the course of somebody's plans and more people are coming in. But it's exciting, no doubt about it. WWTRaceway.com if you want to get tickets to the NASCAR Cup playoff race in St. Louis, the Enjoy Illinois 300. Of course, there's more than that. The Xfinity race, Confluence Music Festival, and all the associated activity around Worldwide Technology Raceway. General manager is Chris Blair. He's up in Iowa for the NASCAR race this afternoon. Thanks so much for being with us today.
All right, Tom, take care, and we'll see you very, very soon.
Absolutely. That is Chris Blair with us. I'm looking forward to that. You talk about an entity that's close with its fan base. That's it right there. They listen to the fans. They talk to the fans. They connect with the fans. We'll come back and visit with Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. He's at 11:30. Bernie Miklas at 11:45. You're listening to Sports on a Sunday Morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
On 104.1 KMOX, from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
We thank you all for making this part of your Sunday, Sports on a Sunday Morning. Tom Ackerman back with you live at 11:30, and we thank this gentleman for joining us every Sunday. The President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak, is with us. Morning, Mo.
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Doing well. We'll recap the trade deadline with you, but I wanted to at least look back at a nice highlight from yesterday. Cardinals get a win 8-5 over the Padres, and a good performance, not only by the offense and by Michael McGreevy for hanging in there, but a new-look bullpen puts together a nice closing few innings there.
Yeah, a couple thoughts here, right? McGreevy was great. Obviously, gave up a few early, but stayed in it. I think as the game went on, he got better, which is always great to see. And then from an offensive standpoint, obviously, runs have been hard to come by the last really month or so. So it's been somewhat inconsistent, but yesterday was some great at-bats against some really good arms. So that was exciting to see. And he touched on the bullpen. The one thing that we felt all along this year was that we really did have some good arms in that bullpen, meaning quality pitchers that can make pitches. Yes, some of them are young. Yes, some of them don't have experience. But, you know, the next couple months, they're going to get opportunities that they obviously weren't getting exposed to in the first 4 months of the season. And so it's going to be fun to watch. But, you know, I'm certainly excited about where we are. Obviously, I you know, don't like having to do what we did at the trading deadline, but we really couldn't go the last 2 months with expiring contracts. It just didn't make any sense. And hopefully we added some depth to our minor leagues and some quality young prospects. As you know, you never know what you're really going to get until you see them, but certainly going to give these young guys an opportunity and see what we have.
Yeah, if you would, break down the Helsley deal. Those are three single-A players you just mentioned. We're not going to know what they look like until we see them for a little longer. But one of them that jumps out, Jesus Baez, projects perhaps as a third baseman, has some pop and some speed, Mo.
Yeah, I think like the one thing, given his age, given where he's playing right now, he's going to stay on the dirt, certainly get a lot of looks at short. Obviously, we don't have a massive need for a shortstop at the big league level, but, you know, just keep him developing. I think the exciting part of him is really just the offensive profile. He's not a big swing and miss guy. He's someone that puts the ball in play. He hits the ball hard. And, you know, candidly, when you're looking at how the game is evolving, especially after you watch the Padres, seeing someone like Arise who, you know, always puts the ball in play, you know, I kind of miss watching those kind of games. So having someone that might have that type of profile, not saying he's going to be him, but just someone that makes high contact rate and hits it hard, I think that's a good skill.
Intriguing player you received for Mats, Blaze Jordan, big-time pop when he was a kid and through high school, and then the Red Sox grabbed him, and it was Heim Bloom, part of that draft process. Blaze Jordan for Mats, Mo.
Yeah, obviously I think the power has not grown as it was so prolific at a young age of 13. But his offensive profile is, again, a guy that's a high contact rate, low strikeout rate, good walk rate. like his approach is just like a pure hitter. And from that standpoint, that's what we liked about him. Obviously, we're going to see what he looks like defensively, how he fits in. But, you know, ultimately, the bat profile is what we were excited about.
The Maton deal seemed like it came down to the wire, did it? Was that down to the last few minutes, or did you have something in place?
No, it was so Maton obviously was a guy that a lot of teams had interest in, and we just weren't lining up on the players we liked versus what they were willing to trade. So there was some frustration going on as we approached the deadline. And then with Texas, I think we completed that deal as far as like physicals and all that with maybe 1 minute and 8 seconds to spare. It was like it was not a lot of room. But, you know, again, if we hadn't been able to do it, I think we would have been disappointed on holding him on. You know, Phil was great for us. He was I think he really helped some of our young pitchers along the way as well. So hopefully we'll see if these young guys can, you know, take what they learned from somebody like a Phil Maton and grow. And I think that's the fun part of it. But, you know, a lot of other things were going on at the trading deadline, but it just wasn't to the point where myself and really even somebody like a Heim, who's starting to think a lot more in the future than I really need to focus on, we just weren't getting the types of offers or felt like we were getting what we needed in return to make those kind of deals. And, you know, ultimately, I think we positioned ourselves well. Still, there's lots of work to always be done. And, you know, I think these guys are, you know, now you flip the script to the offseason and start thinking more about that. And that's where their headspace will be.
The deadline got a little crazy. I mean, I think the Twins fire sale really lit the fire, if you will, for that deadline. I felt like that was really, and obviously the Padres got very active, but it got fast paced there quickly, didn't it, Mo?
Yeah, I think you could say Seattle was active. You could say San Diego was active. You can say Yankees were active. You know, the buyer's market was there. But, you know, there were also other teams trying to improve too, Boston, Toronto, Detroit. But it just wasn't necessarily always aligning. And the Minnesota situation, I don't think a lot of people saw coming, especially how aggressive they were on trading off. Baltimore was aggressive trading off. So, you know, the sellers became a little bit more prominent than maybe people first thought.
It pretty much went as you told us last week that, you know, they're, without naming them, we knew who the players were who had expiring contracts, and you told us position players don't have them. Romero doesn't either. So I would imagine you got calls on a lot of people, including all those lefty bats and a lefty arm, but just ultimately could not find the right players that you wanted. And take us into the room on that. So you have a whole list of people that you want, and it's just not coming through?
So obviously every deal is sort of independent, but what you're trying to do is, as teams line up to talk, for example, on Helsley, you're trying to determine, like, okay, what's the best possible deal we can get for Hels? Or the best deal or the deal we most value. And so I felt like once we cleared Hels, then we could then focus on multiple things. But Helsley was drawing a lot of attention, and obviously the return was going to be more significant. So a lot of energy went on that. I was extremely grateful we were able to accomplish that the day before the deadline. So then it allowed us to have a lot more bandwidth to really entertain a lot of other things, but clearly we wanted to make sure the expiring contracts were moved, and we were able to do that. And then a lot of the other things that we teased or talked about just never got to the point where we had the confidence to really act on them.
And moving forward, I know you're not, I've never found you to be an emotional person necessarily, very businesslike, but I'm sure that hit you, that was the last one for you, the last trade deadline.
You know, you never say never, right? It was a bit surreal in terms of like walking out of there, in terms of like when you think about my career with the Cardinals. I mean, I don't envision myself having to make any real major decisions now between now and the time I step away. So, you know, that was a lot going on that week. And then to walk out of that room thinking back that, those are the kind of things that you miss because they're exciting. It's a lot going on. But there's also the part that, you know, you're not going to miss, where people say you didn't do enough, you're boring, you're just a vanilla. And it's like, that's the side of the game where getting away from it is going to be kind of fun, where I just, don't have to hear that much anymore. And, I'm going to miss a lot about the game of baseball, but some of those things I'm not at all.
Well, you were certainly on one of the biggest stages in sports, president of baseball operations of the St. Louis Cardinals. You still are. There will be a transition. There has been a transition of power to Chaim Bloom. How does that work now moving forward here? It's not obviously an overnight handoff. This has been going on for a while.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in my role, I've been still in my role. I think when you think about like the word transition now, as the organization starts to focus on 2026, clearly employee contracts, employee hiring, if there's going to be any employees that aren't going to be a part of the organization, like that's really going to have to fall under Chaim and then the director level staffing. If they want my opinion, I absolutely will give it to them, but I can't be the one running those meetings anymore because obviously that's their team moving forward. And so, as we look at August, September, October, when I was, in charge and not going anywhere, I would always use the month of August for strategic planning and getting organized. And then all those action plans would then go into motion in September. And then usually we'd use October to fill in any gaps we have. But then as we start to get into October, transition into how we want to think about roster building and player acquisition. So all of that, I imagine they're going to follow a very similar path because it's just kind of what you do in this game. But that's really for them to take the lead on and not necessarily for me to be involved in anymore.
I've had a lot of questions about the complex in Jupiter, and I haven't asked you about that. How is that moving along?
It's going. There's a lot going on. I'm hoping to pop down at some point to really give you a better update. But the pictures I receive, it's a huge project. I mean, as you can imagine, both sides are getting worked on, meaning the Cardinals, Marlins, and we're not only are we renovating the actual building that you're used to seeing, but there's also going to be three new structures that are being put up: a batting cage, a performance center, and then a commissary/conference center. So a lot's going on. We're excited about what it's going to look like. That might be one of the things I'm going to miss most, is not actually being a part of like the ribbon cutting, if you will. But maybe I'll pop back down for that, because it's been a labor of love for almost like 10 years. We've been working on this, and just between the trying to get some help on the public financing, trying to get designs, and it's just been a lot, as you know. In the end, I think it's going to be really cool what they ended up doing. And I think from a player standpoint, they're going to enjoy what they see, because the actual footprint's not going to change that much in terms of like the intimacy of that ballpark. And then I think some of the ballpark amenities for our fans will be much improved as well. So a lot of positives, and hopefully, come mid-February next year, it's ready to go.
Mo, finally, you've been at the very top. I mean, you've won world championships. You've seen this machine moving at its best. You've seen the fans be turned away. It couldn't get into the ballpark. You and ownership both. Just looking at the future here, how do you get back to that? And did you hear them? Did you feel that with the empty seats? And did that send a ripple through the organization? How do you get back to that feeling again?
Well, I certainly hope we're hearing it. I'm there every day. I definitely know that it's not what it once was. I do feel like ever since we came back from the pandemic, it hasn't been necessarily the same, but you're seeing other places draw. And I think it's more than just necessarily like talking about winning baseball. There's other things that are around the ballpark that we have to just make sure that we can address, from things like safety, parking, accessibility. All of those things need to go into how we approach getting back to where we were for so long. And it's not a light switch. It's not one simple answer. But, you know, I think a thoughtful and strategic way to do it, I think eventually the fans will come back. But you got to always remind yourself there are some ebb and flows and cycles of these things. And, you know, every team has experienced a lull over the last 30 years. No one is consistently drawn, with the exception of maybe the Cardinals for that period of time. But now we are starting to see a dip. There's no doubt about it. And we can't take our customers or our fans for granted. And we have to make sure that we hear what they want and address that.
Thank you for the time this morning. It's always great to catch up with you. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Beautiful day here in St. Louis, I can tell you that.
Yeah, fabulous. So, yeah, enjoy the Sunday. Thank you.
Enjoy your day. John Mozeliak, president of baseball operations of the Cardinals. Bernie Miklas comes up next. Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio. We'll be right back.
Here is Tom Ackerman.
9 minutes on the clock for Bernie Miklas as we discuss things to wrap up the show. Bernie, how are you, Pally?
I'm doing good. Always a pleasure to be with you, Tom.
Always good to be with you. Let me give you a quick recap, and listeners can help me on our YouTube and et cetera comments if they want. But here's my quick recap of what John Mozeliak said. One, the trade deadline, they just couldn't find a deal for anybody beyond the three expiring contracts. In fact, he said the Maton deal really frustrated them. It came down to the wire, and they just weren't getting the players they wanted. Finally, they got the pair from Texas. Beyond that, couldn't and wouldn't make the deal. And Heim was also in on that and didn't want to make the deals. And he thought that, you know, he's got to leave the future to Heim Bloom as to what these prospects and players, that's kind of his territory. It's kind of how I took that anyway. He said the transition to Heim has been underway. He is still handling some things, but it sure sounds like Mozeliak really being open about, you know, the big things that I have to handle are over. When it comes to baseball decisions is kind of how I took that conversation. So it sure sounds like that was the last big thing, and he was emotional about it. He said he will miss a lot of things. He will not miss a lot of the, you know, second guessing, accusations, criticism that comes his way. I told him, you know, that comes with the territory being on the big stage, but he was pretty open about that, I thought. And then finally, you know, just sort of looking ahead to the future and the loss of fans in the crowd, you know, he won't go and say, you know, this is about us winning and losing. He said it's more than that. He said we need to improve parking, safety. He thought that since the pandemic, there have been some issues in getting people in the seats. Fans are going to, you know, jump on that like red meat. I mean, saying that he's blaming it on the pandemic or something. But anyway, those are the thoughts of John Mozeliak kind of in a nutshell over the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a lot there. You know, number one, I do give him credit because I've been saying all along that I had no doubt that Heim Bloom was in the loop. It was just a question of how much influence Heim Bloom had. I think we saw it in the draft. He had a lot. I think we saw it in terms of the players, the prospects the Cardinals got from the Mets. I mean, Heim Bloom knows prospects very well, and his team, the guys that are down in the player development system, they know prospects very well. And I think that was reflected in what the Cardinals got from the Mets and also getting Blaze Jordan, who Heim Bloom, after all, drafted when he was running the Red Sox. And, you know, he was in the deal for Steven Matt. So you could see touches of Heim Bloom really starting with the draft and I think that's a positive thing. I think that it was just impossible for, as far as like, could they have gotten this or could they have gotten that? We'll never know. I mean, candidly speaking, you know, John Mozeliak does have a rep within the game of just, you know, driving a hard bargain, and everybody does, but they find, you know, I've spoken to front office types say it's nothing personal, but he's tough to deal with. And so I never know. I'm being honest here. I never know if, like, Mo, for example, overplays his hand. I think there's been some instances of that. I can't say that that's what happened here, but I'm raising the possibility. And the other thing, and Tom, this is nothing new. You and I work together, and I've said this a bunch of times. One of the problems with the Cardinals is they have a tendency, a strong, strong tendency to overrate their own players. And so if you know, teams are calling for some of those players as they did it at this deadline, the left-handed bats, which Mo mentioned. I'm not sure whether I can't be confident that this wasn't another case of the Cardinals overrating their own guys. Oh no, we're not going to trade this guy unless we get this. And maybe they asked for too much. And that's what happens when you overrate your own players. And I think, frankly, this is one of the things that has gotten them into the predicament they're in. So, listen, Mo's taking the brunt of the criticism. And what you said is right. It's just the way it works. I mean, when some people remember, most people will forget, you know, when Tony La Russa and Walt Jocke, that great tandem, you know, they didn't win their first National League pennant until their ninth season together. And they didn't win their World Series together, the first one, until their 11th season. And my point being, if you remember, Tom, and I know people of a certain age remember, like Tony La Russa in particular was just getting blasted all the time. I mean, people were flying like those little prop planes over the field in Jupiter saying, "Fire La Russa, save the franchise," stuff like that. He was getting just like, it's amazing to think back on it. He was getting ripped to shreds a lot by fans and some media. So Mo should know that, like you said, Tom, it is part of the job. And if things go poorly, and listen, it's gone poorly since the start of 2023. The Cardinals they rank 22nd in the majors in winning percentage. That's not Cardinals baseball. They've been basically a postseason non-factor since winning the NLDS, beating Atlanta in the first round of 2019. That's a long time ago, really. So I understand it. It can't be easy to be in the public square and get, you know, beat up all the time. I'm not saying he should feel good about it, but I think it was inevitable. It was predictable, and I understand the way he feels. But let's be straight about this. The Cardinals brought this on themselves. I mean, it's as simple as that. They had a great model. It got outdated. They didn't stay modern. They didn't stay with the things that got them the advantage in the first place, and they let it slide. And that's on ownership, and that's on Mo. I mean, it's as straightforward as I can be about that, and I think we all pretty much understand that.
A couple minutes left. If I'm a fan, why should I believe in Chaim Bloom moving forward?
Well, you might not believe in him at first, because if they're going to do what I think they're going to do, which is rebuild, and listen, rebuild is not a dirty word. When you put rebuild out there, people think we're going to tear it down to the studs. There's going to be nothing left. I'm not talking about that. They're not going to do that either. But when you rebuild, you know, it's a situation where you are, and I think this winter, they are going to have to offload some of the guys that are on this team, simply because they're not going to have enough jobs to go around if they want to bring up Weatherholt, if they want a spot for Sejacy. They're overloaded with infielders. They've got too many outfielders. I mean, you know, when you're going to promote guys from AAA, you got to make room for them. And the Cardinals are going to have to move some people out. And that's part of a rebuilding. A rebuilding is when you move veterans out to promote young guys. And rebuilding is not a horrible, horrible thing. In fact, I think the Cardinals are kind of overdue in recognizing this. They can't continue to kind of go, well, we'll try a little bit of this, a little nip, a little tuck. We'll sign this guy. We'll do this. And, maybe we'll get a wild card spot. See, they've put themselves in this place for too long. And one thing, as you remember, my friend, Ollie Marmol said a couple weeks ago on Gas House Gang, I loved what he said. He said, listen, we don't want to be, I'm going to paraphrase, we don't want to be this team that, you know, just kind of scrapes by, maybe we get a wild card. He said, we want to show up in the playoffs, and we want to show up thinking we're going to win. And I think he said, and I'll quote him, you know, he said, we want to be ready to beat people's ass. I mean, that's what he said. Mm-hmm. And so his point is, you don't want to just keep doing it incrementally, and maybe you'll get lucky, and maybe you'll do this. No, you want to build for the long term, and you got to do it the right way. So people may not like the Chaim Bloom approach. I say that the approach is not only smart, I think it's long overdue. And I think it'll pay off if people are patient. I can't tell people whether they should be patient or not, but I think the Cardinals have a lot of work to do to get the fans back, and it's going to take some time. There are no quick fixes. The worst thing they can do is throw money around for for players that may not be worth the money. They can't try to take these shortcuts. They've put themselves in this situation where they have got a big, big ditch to climb out of. And you just have to do it one step at a time. I mean, there's no miracle cures here. So that's my read on the situation. I think, unfortunately, I think Chaim Bloom, once people realize what he wants to do, he'll probably take a lot of flack too, but he's going to have to do it. I mean, that's it, because they got to do it this way.
Comes with the territory. Bernie Miklas, very well done. Thanks so much. Always great to hear from you. Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure. Have a great day.
Visits with Bernie, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. We'll see you tomorrow morning.